Welcome back to the Kevin O'Connor Show. We got a loaded episode today with Pete from Laker Film Room talking about Luka going to the Lakers. And then Mo DeHeel from Bleacher Report comes on to discuss the Fox deal and a whole lot else happening around the NBA that's coming up next. Now joining us, Pete from Laker Film Room. Pete, how's it going, man?
I'm good. Long time no see, Kevin. How you been, man?
Things are great, man. I'm sure you're on quite a high right now with the surprise of Saturday night with Luka Doncic being traded to the Lakers for Anthony Davis. He was just introduced on Tuesday morning in Los Angeles. Rob Pelinka on stage with him. And I want to talk with you about Luka coming to the Lakers, the fit with LeBron James, building this team out in the future. And Pelinka did talk a little bit about this. But the first thing I want to hit on with you is that LeBron-Luka fit. Luka was asked about it as you'd expect him to be asked, and he said, it's a dream come true. I've always looked up to him. There's so many things I can learn from him. I'm curious, Pete, like, what do you think Luka can learn from LeBron James and however long they're going to be playing together?
Well, you know, so much of the discussion around why the heck would you ever trade Luka Doncic was based on his conditioning, a bet against his body in the future and things like that. LeBron James has had a plan for his body since he was a teenager. And so I think that's an area, the conditioning element that,
yes.
And then there's also a certain gravitas where LeBron can look Luka in the eyes and be like, I know what it's like to carry a franchise, and I've actually accomplished more than you have while doing it. How many people in the world can say that? And Luka's never played with one of them. And so that ability to, and LeBron has always effusively praised Luka and called him his favorite player in the league in a tweet a couple of years ago. And so I think that there is a language that they can speak to each other. LeBron and Magic Johnson have a certain relationship that is in that realm as well. And so I think in those aspects of this is how you can go from great to champion.
And I think LeBron, when it comes to that, the stuff like that, he has always been someone, as ball dominant as LeBron has been in his career, he is someone who has been willing to do the other stuff. When playing with Wade, we saw him obviously take a little bit of a backseat sometimes. He'd be used as a screener more, as a cutter more. He didn't have to dominate the ball. AD with the Lakers in recent years, you see the rise of Austin Reeves as well. I mean, LeBron screens for Reeves four or five times a game. And that's Austin Reeves.
That's right.
So I think that's something Luka can look at and say, oh, wait a minute. LeBron cuts five times as often as I do. Little
right.
things like that. That's what makes a champion on top of the conditioning aspect.
Very much so. And LeBron, fun stat for you, last season wasn't the Lakers' top pick and roll ball handler and wasn't second either. He ran the third most pick and rolls on the Lakers last season for D'Angelo Russell and Austin Reeves. And
it's so incredible.
Right. And so this idea that LeBron is ball dominant, I understand, but I would argue he's played with all of these other ball dominant players. And if you actually watch LeBron play, he's the best screener on the team. He is a great connector he's gotten much better as a shooter. And so there has been a certain burden the Lakers have had in terms of having a power guard that they tried and failed to address with Russell Westbrook, but a certain burden alleviation of LeBron of like, damn, I got to be the guy that breaks down the defense every single time. And that's more of a skill thing with Austin Reeves and D'Angelo Russell, how they would navigate pick and rolls. But when the ball pressure turns up and the physicality turns up, it was really only LeBron that you can have. And so this is the first time I can think of in NBA history that a team has had two jumbo initiators, two guys that are 6'7", 6'8", that are natural point guards playing together on the same team. These are both players, Kev, that are in the upper echelons of being able to see opportunities that you couldn't see, that no one else could see on the court, and now they play together. I don't think that's ever happened before.
I don't think it's ever happened either. I mean, you think about like big duos. It's like usually in a traditional big, it's Shaq and Kobe. It's McHale and Bird. Like it's one true big, a low post player involved in that, or it's two wings who aren't natural point guards, Tatum and Brown, Kawhi and Paul George. It's like these types of combinations, but I can't think of anything close to resembling what we're going to see with LeBron James and Luka. What do you think JJ Redick, like creativity wise, it could be thinking about at this point when it comes to how to best install actions that maximize what these guys can do for each other in ways that we really truly haven't seen any time in NBA history.
Yeah, I think a lot of what the Lakers already do, it's fairly simple, and a lot of it's in the middle of the court. The Lakers run a lot of horns actions, a lot of double drags, a lot of split posts, but it's basically two or three players in the middle of the floor and then spaced out to the deep corners and a couple of different variations of that. My second biggest worry for this Lakers team prior to this trade was the ability to beat switches in the playoffs. And just that's something that across the board between LeBron, AD, and Austin, that once teams could switch and they had a little bit of size and physicality, Lakers would struggle to score in the half court. Trading for Luka Doncic basically single-handedly resolves that type of concern. And so
he's the ultimate switch killer.
That's right. And so that box is checked and delivered and sent out. And so I think the type of three-man actions where it's like they both saw an opportunity that nobody else saw on the floor, or pass it to the dunker spot and then ping it out to the weak side wing that could just be some of the coolest basketball and most creative and imaginative basketball ever. I have concerns about the defensive end for sure, but on offense, I think it could be great.
Oh, for sure. I mean, I think it's interesting when it comes to those guys. I forget who it was recently. Oh, yeah, it was Jokic and Russ. Jokic had said it's like he's reading my mind in regards to Russell Westbrook. Mm-hmm. Like, they just have this telepathic connection with each other. I could imagine it might be something similar to that with LeBron and Luka. Now, you mentioned, obviously, defense is concerning. They need to add a big, that's for sure. Pelinka was asked about, you know, building this roster out, and he's more talking long term, but I thought his answer was very interesting, how he said it, the focus is building around JJ Redick's coaching style, around Luka's strengths. Didn't really give a mention to LeBron here. Understandably so, when he's 40 years old and maybe he only has one more year left. But I do think, you know, as David McMenamin said at ESPN, maybe partially informed speculation, Luka is somebody who could extend LeBron's career if LeBron chooses to. We've seen LeBron manage to maintain top 10 level player in the league production as his athleticism has waned. He's still obviously one of the best athletes on the planet, but he's not like otherworldly alien level in the ways that he was in his prime level. Now, LeBron can be a screener guy. He's a 43% shooter on catch and shoot threes the last two seasons with the Lakers. He's a knockdown guy at this point. He can score on the post if he needs to. I really do think there's a chance here that maybe LeBron does want to stick around for an extra year or two, because this is the first time in his career that he doesn't have to be the best player on the team. Like, what does LeBron look like as an overqualified number two? And there were times AD was the best player, but not to the extent as an offensive engine that Luka can be.
That's exactly it. It's the difference between the offensive engine and not. And so when LeBron's been asked about this in the past, he's always gone to the mental aspect of things. The reason his game has aged so well is everybody gets slower. Not everybody can't jump as high as they used to, but LeBron's still going to be strong. He's still going to be brilliant. He's still going to know the fundamentals of the game. He's still going to have vision and understanding, and he's gotten much better as a shooter. And so whenever he's been asked about this, he's talked about that mental aspect of, did you ever hear Woj talk about why he stopped doing what he's doing? And like, one of the things he was like, man, I was tired of taking 30-second showers and just the, you know, the things like that. For LeBron, yeah. It's like, bro, do I want to like be on the struggle bus on a play-in adjacent team for the next? Or that sounds exhausting. I think if they can build something around Luka, there's a certain life. And let's go compete for titles. Yeah, I bet you could extend his career.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. If titles are like of high likelihood, if you're one of the favorites instead of, yeah, like you said, play-in potential. Completely different story. And that's what's exciting for the Lakers with the way that they get Luka. They give Christie, who's worth a first-round pick, and they gave one of their future first-round picks, and they gave AD, who's worth four or five. So they gave up a good amount of value in the deal, but they didn't give up everything as you would expect they would have had to go get Luka. So they still retain some level of assets to go out there and make further acquisitions. They still have some very tradable players. Maybe Austin Reaves becomes more expendable now because you have Luka and LeBron handling so much of the creation duties, or maybe he is, you know, a great number three. We'll see there. But the fact is they have options here. The number one thing the Lakers need, like, pronto, like right now, they need to find a center. When you have Christian Koloko and Jackson Hayes is really your only true fives right now, mm-hmm. That's a pressing serious concern. I mentioned on the podcast over the weekend that I've heard Mitchell Robinson is one of the many bigs they're taking a look at. I'm not so certain Mitchell Robinson should be the target there. He might not come back until March or April for the Knicks. So he's not short-term help. He'd be more playoff help. Are there any bigs that you have in mind that would make sense for the Lakers to target?
Oh, man. I think that I've thought about this the last couple of days. Forgive me. I'm a little disoriented right now from having from this trade in terms of Laker needs. I said that beating switching defenses was my second biggest concern with the Lakers in the playoffs. Number one was their rebounding. And that was before they traded Anthony Davis. And so, yes, they need a five. That personnel isn't going to work out. However, there is less of a, if you don't make a run this season, you are not going to make a run anytime soon type of desperation that, to answer your question, Time Lord becomes very interesting to me.
Yeah.
Of like, hey, can we get a lob threat? But I think they need a starting five, and I view him as more of your second big. Like the idea of pairing him with Anthony Davis and just being nasty on defense, huge, but able to switch everything and all of that was super intriguing to me. The idea of, hey, we really need you to play 28 minutes a game and 70 games a year and all of that is a level of, you know, need there that I would love Mitchell Robinson even long-term, although injury concerns there. Miles Turner, of course, that's an annual tradition, or Miles Turner to the Lakers rumors.
You get Luka, you can get anybody, clearly. There's no trade idea that's too outrageous.
Kevin,
clearly.
This is why we Photoshop your stars into our jerseys. You'll never get that to stop now.
It's the truth. There's no Photoshop.
You can't even tell us nothing. Can't. No more. Sorry, we won. We won this round.
I think a couple other bigs. You nailed like every player you mentioned is on my list as well for them, like the players I'd target as a Lakers center. Nick Claxton, a little pricey, but like he's one of the best switching bigs in basketball. So he'd be, you know, one of the guys I'd really like to go out for if I'm the Lakers. How about Onyeka Okongwu from the Hawks? A bit on the smaller side, but does have some switchability, theoretical floor spacing ability as well. Walker Kessler, everybody mentions Walker Kessler, obviously from the Utah Jazz, and De'Ron Sharp from the Nets. He's somebody that multiple teams I've heard are making inquiries with Brooklyn to go get De'Ron Sharp. Maybe the Lakers should be one of those teams. I'd love him as a rebounder, passer at the five. Again, a little bit undersized height-wise, but has length, versatility. I'm a fan of him.
The devil works hard, but Aaron Riley works harder. I do like De'Ron Sharp, though. I don't think he is a starting caliber, like, let's make a run in the playoffs type of guy. But I do think he could help quite a bit. That said, I think that they need a caliber of player at that position that, yeah, Okongwu, I think, would be super intriguing because I think they're going to lean into foot speed. I think you'll see a lot of small ball groups. In terms of what are the things, Kevin, do you think that a small ball group needs to do well to play small? What would you say?
Versatility, length, communication, connectivity.
Rebounding, right?
You got to
have a certain amount of size.
Team rebounding, of course, yep.
A certain amount of collective winginess, right? That if you start with LeBron and Luka, you got Vando in there. I think Rui is probably, like, we'll see if he gets traded. Him and Gabe are kind of the likeliest to get traded.
Especially with their salary number 17 for Rui and 10 or 11 for Gabe Vincent. I agree, absolutely.
For sure. But if they stuck around, they'd be big parts of small ball type of groups as well. And so I think that at some point when you get to the, I do think the Lakers will try to make a trade for sure. But I think at some point when you get to Jackson Hayes or Christian Coloco as your best options, kind of changing the strategy overall and seeing if you can get a little bit weird, it might be your best route to it. But remember when Dallas traded for Kyrie and they stunk out loud and missed the playoffs right after because they were so misshapen? They didn't have any interior presence defensively. And so they're just getting killed until they resolved it that next offseason. I think there's a chance this Lakers team is actually worse in the short term, depending on what happens at the trade deadline, as a result of just kind of being this imbalanced roster.
Which would be totally understandable considering the roster. One short-term name I want to mention to you, he was waived over the weekend after being traded to the Jazz. Mo Bamba. How about a return from Mo Bamba to the Lakers?
I don't think Mo Bamba's happening, my man. That's a back of the roster type of thing. Yeah.
How about, you know, a little short-term? Come on. Give me Mo Bamba. Give him another chance. He was good before he got hurt with the Lakers. He was solid. Not a fan, Pete.
No. I like very low motor. They need somebody that like really wants to play basketball.
I know. The motor's been better this year. It's just the Clippers, like Ty Lue likes to play small as well. Obviously, Zubats has been excellent for the Clippers. Yeah, tough. Hopefully, Bamba finds a good spot. He's one of my guys.
So with guys like Bamba and Sharp, it's like, I like them, right? This is what I'd like to have them as part of the organization type of thing. My mindset right now at the trade deadline is, can we find a way to make a run this year with Luka and LeBron? Is there any way that we could do that? And those guys just don't enter the conversation for me on that.
And I agree completely. And like ultimately, they are a big away from being a team that can make serious noise in the postseason. They just are. Like, it's such a truth. When you have Luka on your team, you automatically have a shot to make a run. He took the Mavericks to the Western Conference Finals years ago when he was younger. Obviously leads them to the finals last year against Boston. When you have a player of that caliber, you get a chance, especially when you have a player of the caliber of LeBron James, who now is the second best player on the team. I still think LeBron is a top 10 guy in the league. I think some of the stuff about him being a non-top 10 guy are outrageous, the level he's playing basketball. So you have two top 10 talents on your team with some really good role players on your roster already. If they get the right big, they got a shot to take down OKC, best in the West right now. OKC's still young. I'd still think they're the favorite, but the Lakers have something different here because with SGA, there's still the concern about what happens with Jalen Williams, Chet Holmgren. There's still that question about that second guy as a scorer. Sometimes their shooting also falls flat as well. So I don't think they're unbeatable in the West for a long list of reasons. And that's true with Denver, with Jokic as well. They could take down OKC as well, but the Lakers have entered that conversation if they find the right big.
So damn you for making me argue against the Lakers on your national podcast very quick, but a little bit of pushback. Max Christie has been very useful and helpful for the
loss.
Lakers. And he's he does a job specifically of guarding the other team's best player. That who is that on the Lakers now? 6'1" Gabe Vincent?
Yeah.
Can't shoot true. Vando, not a lob threat either. You know, like Vando is great at it, don't get me wrong, but adds a level of complication on the offensive end that like even we traded two starters in which that job has to be filled by someone. And the way I see it is the Lakers have the assets to fill one of their two gaping holes that are remaining on the defensive end. So I'm ultimately very skeptical of the Lakers' ability to defend and rebound to the degree that they would need to. But we can be surprised by a trade, can't we?
Yeah.
Right?
that has been proven for sure.
So we'll see.
Palinka did kind of, you know, he said it without saying it, more likely offseason for getting that center that we're talking about here. He said the market's very dry right now, but you know, that could also just be him, you know, open, trying to gain some leverage at a press conference as well. So we'll see there with the Lakers. I do think your point about the wing position is a good one. If this fails, if LeBron and Luka just don't mesh, what went wrong?
Ooh, that's a good question. They have a there's a certain Spider-Man meme component to them. Like, first time Luka stays behind a play to complain about the grave injustice that he just suffered at the hand of the referees, and like LeBron is irritated at that, it's going to be a very Spider-Man meme type of moment, right? They have some of the same petulant, I've been the man my entire life, and so I'm going to be kind of a brat sometimes.
How dare
on the
you?
Court. Right? And if they're both doing that, God, are either you dudes going to get back on court, now you're 5-on-3, and Austin Reeves is, you know, doing this on a 3-on-1? That's how it fails, I think.
I think that's true. I don't think it'll fail offensively. I think it'll be that kind of that X factor, that personality aspect. Now, with the Maverick side of things, I'm curious about your thoughts with the AD fit for Dallas, because I think Lakers fans hold AD in a special regard, whether it's Mike Trudell, like, who, you know, loves AD. I text with him sometimes. He's always like, dude, you underrate AD. Everybody underrates AD. Every Lakers fan in my life knows that AD is a truly special talent. Now, I feel like nationally, the conversation with him is sometimes about durability, and understandably so, until recent years. But with AD now going to Dallas, you have Nico Harrison talking about defense wins championships. I think some of the things he said were absolutely foolish, as I talked about with Jason Gallagher on the podcast earlier this week. But to Nico Harrison's point, their roster does have some balance. AD, an elite defensive player who looked like an MVP candidate earlier this season, paired with Derek Lively or Daniel Gafford. AD himself talked about wanting to be a four next to a five. Kyrie playing basketball on an all-star level with a bunch of really good wings on that roster, adding Max Christie to the mix. I feel like there's a chance the Mavericks look better this season. Would you agree with that, considering the talent that AD has and brings to that Mavericks roster?
Better than the Lakers? Like toward the end of the season,
better than Dallas would have having not made a trade.
You mean
there's a chance
than having Luka Doncic on their team?
A chance.
Yeah.
A chance.
Yeah.
I don't think so. There is a chance.
There is a chance. Their defense will be nasty. And Kidd was a Lakers assistant on that 2020 team, and a very underrated part of the brain trust of the defensive schemes. And Dallas just kicked the Lakers' butts not too long ago without Luka or Kyrie as a function of how together they were on the defensive end. The thing about AD is that he's a dirty work superstar, in that he's a very unusual type of superstar, in that I can't think of another player who considers himself a four who is not either three-point threat at high volume or a ball handler. The only non-three-point threat fours that I can think of are Giannis and Zion. And those are guys that can rack it. You know, they can get to the basket off of the dribble. AD can do that, but it's not like the best thing that he's at. But he is such a complete player, and this is part of the reason why Laker fans defend him, that he can fill in the gaps. And sometimes the motor's turned off or he's hurt, right? So he can be a frustrating player for sure. But he can so completely dominate a game in so many different facets. There's a version of him that's Wilt Chamberlain. There's a version of him that's Bill Russell that's dominating with a 15 and 23 with eight stock type of performance. He can be a few different things. My concern with Dallas, and again, I don't follow them the way that other people do, but I saw Kyrie struggling as a second guy once it really got turned up defensively, mm-hmm. to a degree where it's like, now that's your top guy. And I've seen that happen with AD. That's one of the downsides of him as a superstar, is he's a good on-ball player, but kind of matchup dependent. You can, like a bigger player that can move his feet enough, and he's not the athlete that he was when he joined the Lakers, AD, that, you know, you can kind of take away his ISOs a little bit. He becomes more, he's great in the pocket on pick and rolls and things like that. So that's kind of where I go with that, Kev.
I agree with you 100%. Kyrie in the finals last year against Boston, everybody talks about Luka getting roasted on defense, the windy moment after one of the games. You're like, you know, the champions are in that tunnel, the losers are in this tunnel, about Luka's approach to the game. All fair, but Kyrie stunk. He really struggled when the defense got to that level. And like you said, 80 at times when he's asked to be that primary, he's better as that elite top of the line finisher for you, who fills gaps in so many different ways. And so for the Mavs, yes, there's some roster balance. Yes, they could have an elite defense, but we just saw the NBA championship won last year by the team with the greatest offensive rating in history. In today's day and age, offense is what really wins championships. Defenses support that run. So for the Dallas Mavericks, I do worry about what their offensive upside can be once it comes to the playoffs. And I think for them, using some of those assets they got from the Lakers, they have to find another ball handler. It can't just be Spencer Dinwiddie as that second guy behind Kyrie Irving as an offensive initiator. You need to find someone better if you're Dallas.
I mean, is there somebody available like that at the deadline? I think that's an offseason problem for them too.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't really get it from their perspective, frankly. The one thing I will say is that there was such a reaction to the deal of like, you got so little back. Who would you have off the top of your head as players who are worse than Luka but better than AD in the league? Sorry to put you on the spot, but
Anthony Edwards. I mean, it's like a slim. It's like best player, Luka, to like what, the ninth or something like that.
Something like that, you know, right? And then my follow up question:
Tatum, something like that. You know,
or is Minnesota trading Anthony Edwards? No, is Boston trading Tatum? I mean, is Dallas trading Luka Doncic? Yes, apparently. So I understand anything is possible, but you see what I'm saying, right? In terms of like, if your goal was to compete now, from Dallas's mm-hmm. perspective. And you decided we need to trade Luka Doncic, which is insane.
Yeah, it's but nuts.
Let's take that as a given part of the argument.
Yes.
AD is probably the best player you could get back in return. Mm-hmm. And I know that future first round picks that convey in 2048 are the currency of the realm in online discussions about trades, but actually good players right now have a lot of value to people whose assets are on the line in terms of what type of GM they might not be GM of that team in 2048. They want players who are good now, and obviously if Nico Harrison is going to do something like this, he has to deliver very quickly.
Oh boy.
Good luck.
Nico Harrison. Good luck, man. There's a chance, but I'm not betting on that chance for Dallas, man. I'm not betting on that chance at all. Pete, thank you for joining me today, man. You're the best. You're the best and the brightest covering the Lakers, man. Your analysis and the videos you make, your podcast. I've always admired everything you do, man, and it's always great to talk basketball with you. Now, 3,000 miles away here in mm-hmm. Massachusetts, but you're the man, Pete. Thank you for joining me today.
Appreciate you, Kev. I had a blast, man. Thank you for having me on.
Now joining me is Mo Dekeel from Bleacher Report. Mo, what's up, man?
Not a whole lot, Kevin. How are you doing?
I'll tell you what, man. They are going pedal to the metal here, accelerating, literally and figuratively, getting De'Aaron Fox in this deal, because my first thought here is we're going from slow motion Chris Paul pick and rolls with Victor Wembanyama to this speedy, downhill, gets in the paint, at will point guard and De'Aaron Fox. I think we're about to see a new dimensions of Victor that we've ever seen, ever, in his basketball career, even going back overseas. What do you think about this fit for Victor with De'Aaron Fox?
I love it. I mean, just on the pure aspect of the fact that this team will play faster, I think is something that matters a whole lot. Look, historically, Chris Paul teams do not play faster. I know this from personal experience. They tend to play slow. I think this works more in Wembanyama's favor along the lines of let's play faster. I think this is also going to help Castle. Like this is the kind of a team that's screaming to run a little bit fast, but they got, it's like you have a Ferrari, but it's an old person driving it. Sorry, Chris. And they're just very careful and cautious with it. No, this is one you just want to, like you said, pedal to the metal. Let's go. I think it's a great pickup for them. I thought it was a smart move. The moment it was kind of announced De'Aaron Fox wants to go to San Antonio, I mean, there's not a lot of times you hear that sentence. I lived in San Antonio. I don't want to move back. Like, it's not something that you want to have,
Fox's wife is from San Antonio.
Which makes a big difference. Yeah, it makes a big difference. I am a Cali boy. So yes, my Texas time was a little bit different.
Much prefer Cali tacos over Texas tacos as well, right?
Listen, you say tacos, I'm in. Doesn't matter who, what style, they're all good. Shout out to Tacos Cabana.
Well, that's not true. I'm from the Northeast. Tacos out here is never a Mexican food
guy. I don't go
guy.
To the Northeast and think I'm getting tacos. That's the only thing,
You go for Italian.
Italian. I'm going for, seafood. Some seafood. Give me a lobster roll, Kevin, where you're at. But you're good. You can get good tacos. Give me some of that chowder. But I just think along the lines, for the Spurs, I think this signals also, okay, we're going into the next phase, right? Like we questions this year of like, okay, what are they going to be? Is this going to be another year where, and I wouldn't have been mad if they're like, hey, we're just going to kind of stay the course here. But this is an opportunity they saw that they could say, hey, we could accelerate the timeline just a little bit. It's not like they went and were like, okay, they have to win a championship now in the next couple of years. This is, hey, this is a great building block. This is a good duo. This is going to be a good number two for Wemby. I think this is going to be a good piece for them, a guy that can get him the ball, get the guys going. I love the fit with Castle as well. Obviously, these guys both need to shoot a little bit better from three, and I think they'll get there, especially Castle, in the long run. I loved it for them. And then the best part, Kevin, is they didn't give up that much.
Dude, I am floored about the Spurs giving up as little as they did in this deal. Like, I know on the surface, 4 first round picks, 3 second round picks, that sounds like a lot, but they gave up the 2031 Minnesota first round pick. They gave up is really the only high value asset they gave up in the deal. That's it. Everything else, they gave up their own 2027 first. That's going to be a bad pick. They gave up a top 14 protected Charlotte first this year. That's going to turn into 2 second round picks. So it's really 3 first round draft picks, because they're also giving back the Chicago Bulls their pick this year. But it's really 3 first round picks in 5 seconds. That's really what this deal is, with Sidy Sissoko Trey Jones and Zach Collins. Like, I can't believe that they managed to pull this off without giving up one of the Hawks picks. Everybody in Sacramento wanted Stephon Castle from the Spurs. I'm not surprised that they didn't give up Castle, who very well might win Rookie of the Year this year and is a perfect fit next to Fox and Wemby, is like an Iguodala type of player who can fill so many different roles. But I think, you know, if you're talking about assets for assets, the Spurs are the biggest winner of the entire weekend with the haul they gave up for Fox, considering everything else they still have left over, even more than the Lakers, because they still gave up a top 10 player for Luka and Anthony Davis. They still gave up what could be a good first round draft pick in the future. The Spurs are going to be good forever. It's just the reality of it, man. Like, I don't know how they managed to pull this off, but it speaks, I suppose, to the leverage that they had with Fox only wanting to go to San Antonio above anybody, the other team.
I mean, it's interesting because I'm very curious Sacramento's side of it, of, you know, being so willing to placate it that we're going to do this. I also don't think this is a bad haul for the Kings and what they get.
I think LaVine.
But it's not just even the picks, in terms of the picks. Okay, the Charlotte pick turns into 2 seconds. That's 2 good second-round picks. Like, that's going to be probably in the 30s when it becomes the case. We've seen a lot of talent come in. If you scout well, you can find talent in the second round in the 30s and 40s in that regard. Like, that's not like massive, but I'm with you. I would have just assumed one of the Hawks picks was going. And the fact that they didn't give that up to either Sacramento or Chicago is amazing. Like, I love Chicago. They jump in the deal. Hey, we just want the protections. We just want our pick back without any protections, which probably would have fallen. Like, they probably would have kept the pick anyways, but they just want to be sure. You know, in that regards. But if I was Chicago, I would have been trying to get a little bit more in terms of assets. And they even sent back Sacramento's second round pick back to Sacramento. And I think there's just a lot of interesting stuff with that. But I love, again, the setup the Spurs are in, because now, look, whether it's using those picks or flipping those picks into another player down the road, you know, is kind of perfect. Like, they're just kind of, hey, I don't think they're going to make any other move this year that's going to be big. Just see what we have now with Fox, see how it works, kind of evaluate, and then adjust in the offseason. And they have these picks that they can start to move.
Now, do you think with San Antonio, there's any reason to even accelerate more now with this current roster and try to go get another player ahead of Thursday's deadline? Like, for example, this might be a silly idea. This might be the worst idea, or it might be the most genius idea ever, and you're just going to be blown away, Mo. What if the Spurs called up the Suns and asked about Kevin Durant? Why not?
Yeah, I mean, that's something you definitely call and see what the price is on that and things like that. That's if you value, hey, let's just go try to win a championship in the next 2-3 years. Right.
And while Victor's on his rookie contract,
rookie contract. Right. Let's go win one right now. And if that's the case and that's the attitude, like, let's just be honest, man, because it'll probably cost them Castle in that run. It's going to be, I mean, well, I don't know the way GMs are negotiating these days. I don't know. But I think it could be along the lines of, you know, just assume it's, you know, Wemby, Durant and Fox. Like, that's dangerous come playoff time with everything that you have to deal with. And I think that's really a fascinating sort of view of it. You know, I kick the tires on, if I'm San Antonio, every team should have called by now about Durant. You know, let's just be honest here. And I would be serious with it. Hey, because if you really think, hey, we have a chance to go win a championship right now with that lineup, I think that's something you have to really consider. I like it. I don't know how realistic that is. I also know the Spurs are a relatively conservative organization. Like, I don't know the last time they made a huge in-season move like they just did now. So I don't know if they're willing to do it twice. But if it's a chance where you could look and go, okay, we can go win a championship this year by doing that, I think it's something you got to look at.
Is there any other name that you think they should be looking at right now, Mo? Because obviously KD's older. I understand not going to trade 4 of their. They, for what it's worth, they have 8 more first-round draft picks. They have 4 swaps as well. So they still retain a lot of high-value picks. They can swap with Minnesota in the future. They can swap still with Sacramento. The Kings didn't get their own swap back in 2031. Right. They can swap with Boston. They can swap with Atlanta. They have two first-round picks from Atlanta in 2025 and 2027 as well, on top of all of their own future picks. So they have a lot of high-value picks, and still, they didn't have to give up Devin Vassell. They didn't have to give up Castle. They didn't have to give up Sohan. They didn't have to give up even Keldon Johnson, for that matter. They still have some young talent that has value. So the Spurs could do that if they wanted to. They could have the best KD offer if they wanted to do that. But is there anybody else that's, you know, not quite as old as Kevin Durant that comes to mind?
Not quite as old, and I don't think will cost them as much as Kevin Durant. And this is a guy I'm fascinated with. I think he's could move the needle most out of anybody who's going to be traded at this deadline, Luka aside. Cameron Johnson in Brooklyn. Adding that wing, young wing, defender, long, lanky, can shoot, can score, adding more scoring versatility, kind of taking a little pressure off of Wemby to a degree. I think that really kind of makes that team pretty interesting there. I think that's where you start to look around and go like, okay, like that's something that doesn't win a championship this year, but that really puts you in the top of the West, I think, over the next few years. And then a couple of tweaks, a couple of guys get better, and you're right in the mix for a championship.
Cam Johnson's a good idea, actually. You know, he makes $22 million this year. You have multiple salaries you could put together in a deal. Just thinking about this off the top of our heads here. If it is Cam Johnson, if you're the Spurs, you could give Harrison Barnes, who makes 18. You could give Keldon Johnson, who makes 19. You could give Chris Paul, who makes 10, plus another piece. There's so many different configurations that you could go get Cam Johnson. And if it's still the case, and I don't know this, I have not sourced this recently, I have not heard anything new, but it has been previously reported the Nets want two first-round picks for Cam Johnson. I'd imagine the Spurs might be willing to make that payment if it's not, you know, a Hawks pick. If it's one of their own firsts and maybe a rights to a swap, something like that feels like a fair middle ground for Cam Johnson, especially because this year, Mo, I don't know like how real it is. I think it is real. He's showing a lot of new dimensions to his game this year with Brooklyn that he never showed in the past. Off the dribble shooting, creation out of pick and roll, pull up threes. Cam Johnson is no longer that guy we saw in Phoenix, just taking catch and shoot threes after catch and shoot three, driving closeouts. He is a much more dynamic overall player now than he was back then when everybody had eyes on the Suns. To me, like he could do a lot of that stuff for the Spurs in an even more condensed role next to Fox, next to Wemby. I think Cam Johnson's really might be top of my board besides like the big swing of like a KD type.
Yeah, I just think, you know, I love the way Cam plays. And I'm also kind of careful about it because, like, we saw with the whole Mikal Bridges, you know, like, Mikal Bridges blew up in Brooklyn. But I'll be honest, like, if you're going to be a team that's going to win, you need Mikal Bridges Phoenix type. You need him to be willing to play that role more than being the star in that instance. And I think you kind of come to that a little bit with Cam Johnson. But having that versatility and being able to play different ways, I mean, when Wemby goes to the bench, you know, you could have him play off of Fox and work off of each other. You could have him play with Wemby, you know, and run the pick and roll with Wemby. Like, there's a lot of that stuff you can get out of that. I think there's a lot of things that are interesting there. I think he'd be a really interesting piece there. I think, you know, he's a Swiss Army knife. He can do so many things for you. And I think that's kind of the beauty of what you're looking at if you're the Spurs in terms of trying to move for Cam Johnson. I think that actually would almost be the call I'd make right now if I were the Spurs.
Now, this could be related to the Nets conversation because they have bigs. De'Ron Sharpe, multiple teams are inquiring about him from Brooklyn. They have bigs that could move. Now, it didn't work Wemby's rookie year with Zach Collins starting at the five and Wemby at the four. It failed. Their season took off. Victor's season took off when they moved Collins to the bench and Wemby went to the five. But do you think as the Spurs evaluate building this roster out around Fox and Victor, there is some logic to them finding a five that can play alongside Wemby? Or are you all in the camp of Wemby's your five all the time, as much as possible? They just need a backup behind him.
Yeah, I'm probably in the camp of Wemby's the five. I think we have enough proof with that. I think, you know, you need to have a good backup. It's not like, unless you're getting
What about a big four? What about a huge four?
I'm okay with that if you can find a four that can do that and stretch the floor. right? Or at least just be so, can hold up and be the power defensively, right? Bring power forward, bring the power back to the name a little bit. But I think the ultimate thing is you need to be cognizant of the fact of your team went on a run last year with Wemby at the five. He's a five. We can stop playing this game of, is he a five? Is he a four? You know, it's, he's a center. Like at the end of the day, I think that's the most important thing they need to hold sight of. And then now is just finding the guys that work with you and playing at the four. You know, if it's a big guy as a four, if it's a guy like Isaiah Hartenstein at the four, yeah, I'm in. Let's go. I don't, there are very few of those guys though that are out there that can kind of be the Hartenstein of the team. So I think you're kind of in an interesting situation there for them. But I, for me, it's Wemby's the five.
Yeah, I think that's fair. But ultimately, it would be nice to have a backup big who can occasionally play next to him, but not all the time. For the most part, that player will not be starting games, but they, there might be situations where you go to two bigs for certain playoff matchups, whatever it might be, certain regular season matchups where you want to just be big. And maybe sometimes you might not want Victor to have to defend Nikola Jokic. Maybe you want Wemby roaming off of Aaron Gordon in a series and being a guy doubling, helping at the rim. That maybe there's situations like that. Who knows?
I will make one exception. If they can get Brook Lopez, then I will say, okay, Wemby can play the four. Brook Lopez can play the five.
Oh, but and even then, though, I mean, we saw Wemby bother Jokic in ways with his length that nobody else can. Maybe you don't want Lopez.
My thought was more. Just, and it was literally Jokic specific, was, okay, if Lopez could slow Jokic down and Wemby could just rotate over.
Oh my God.
Like, now you have 7 feet and 7 feet coming. It's like, what are you doing?
That's what I'm saying, though. Like, to me, I want that club in my bag if I'm the Spurs. They don't have it right now. I want it in my bag at some point.
It's hard because it's like, okay, then is it a Nick Claxton we're talking about? Like, is that, but is that a guy?
He can't shoot. You know,
he can't shoot. And then on top of that too, that's the guy that you're probably going to have to spend a good amount of money to keep over time. Yes. And that's a bench. That's a guy that's sitting on your bench more than playing.
He's almost too good for what we're talking about, right?
Right. So it's like, who's the guy that's kind of in that?
De'Ron Sharp. How about De'Ron Sharp? Go get Cam Johnson and De'Ron Sharp. De'Ron Sharp could be your backup. And occasionally he can be, you know, a bit of a bruiser, a rebounder next to Wemby.
I'm gonna get in trouble for this, but I kind of like Bassey. Like, I think you're getting good, sure. good. Yeah, you're getting true. Good. You're getting what you need from Bassey. If they're gonna give me De'Ron Sharp in my Cam Johnson hypothetical trade, sure, I'll take him. But like, if it's a situation where I got to give up even more assets to add De'Ron Sharp to the trade, I'm probably not going to do it. Because again, I'm getting what I need from Bassey in large part.
We'll take a quick break, and when we're back, talk about the other teams involved in that trade and a bunch of other stuff happening around the NBA as well. Okay, Mo, the Bulls, I made a post on X about this saying that they just got ripped here. I think it's a horrible return for the Bulls. You give up Zach LaVine, who's posting borderline all-star numbers. He's been very, very good for four of the last 5 years, besides last season when he's been hurt. And all you get back is your own 2025 first-round draft pick, plus Kevin Huerter, Trey Jones, a career backup, Zach Collins, who looks ready to sign in China. I just cannot believe the Bulls didn't get more value back for Zach LaVine, despite how expensive his contract is. I get that. I get it. I just would rather keep Zach LaVine at that price than I would trade him for this. Sometimes it's better to not make a deal than it is to make a deal. I'm blown away that the Bulls didn't get more here for him, or just didn't decide to keep him.
I understand them could have gotten more in that instance. This is also the organization that could have gotten two first round picks for Alex Caruso, supposedly last deadline didn't. And now it's Josh Giddey. You know, so there's a lot of stuff with the Bulls where we can question it. The one thing I like to remind people though, like, I'm not that angry about the Bulls. Maybe it's because I'm just so used to them making these poor decisions.
But in the summer,
well, it's what I expect, right? If they make a good decision, then I'm like, wait, what's going on? Like, now I'm a little bit concerned. It's good to remember, though, that in the summer, they couldn't trade Zach LaVine without attaching a pick. Right. So like there's an important aspect in that, like it was there was a thought like, hey, you're going to have to send a first round pick to get somebody to take LaVine's contract. Now, listen, he's been balling really this whole season.
Been super efficient,
been great. Like there's, you know, borderline all-star, everything, you know, along those lines. So I understand that. OK, maybe the price has changed a bit. But I can see it where they're just not seeing the offers coming in for him that are interesting. That makes sense for them. You know, there's, you know, Milwaukee, I believe, was kicking the tires maybe a little bit, but I don't know what they're offering in a sense that makes it so much for them. The one thing I'd say for them, and it's not a very hard defense because we talked about it already, but I think the idea of them just saying, hey, we just want to make sure if our pick happens to fall out of the top 10, we still have it, right? Because it was top 10 protected, if I remember correctly, that they're getting back. And so I think that's an important for them. I also think this just means there's more trades coming from them, right? Like they're about to tank. Like and you know, I'm sorry, Bulls fans, you guys should have done this a long time ago, but this is going to be a situation where I think we're going to see them really try to get to the bottom here and be pretty bad. But at the same time, there's a risk for them where they're like, damn, we might fall out of the top 10 and we're not going to have a pick.
I mean, look, I misspoke earlier when I said the amount of picks the Spurs gave up as well, though. The Bulls gave up a second in that deal. They gave up their second-round pick in 2025. That's part of it where I'm like, wait a minute. You gave
that
up
that part's stupid.
Top 40 pick, an early second-round pick in a deal when you were already going to likely get your pick anyway.
Yeah,
that, and you're probably going to be in the top 10.
Listen, I'm not surprised. I mean, clearly their asset management is awful. Like just their understanding of it, you know.
They get nothing for DeRozan. They don't get picks for Caruso.
I mean, this is clearly just a front office that's just
they give Patrick Williams $100 million.
That was wild. No, it's a poorly run organization. Like we're being to be clear. So it doesn't surprise me when we put them in this situation. I can just see it from their perspective a little bit. Doesn't mean I agree with it. Doesn't mean I would have done it. I would have tried to get another pick in this deal, whether from Sacramento, whether from the Spurs. I would have tried to. I'd have been like, if you guys really need me to make this trade happen, then I need another pick. Like I would have, one of you guys have to figure that, and I would have held on to my second. But I don't know what to tell you, Kevin.
Well, the Kings benefit here. I like the deal for the Kings because I'm so high on Zach LaVine. I wish the Kings had been able to get more draft capital back in return. But ultimately, for all the reasons why the Malik Monk, Domantas Sabonis duo just meshes with Monk's style of play and athleticism and shooting ability, just that flair he has, I think it can work in the same way with Zach LaVine. So you have LaVine and Monk with Sabonis. I very much am excited to watch the Kings once they get these guys all together. And if you're a Kings fan, you know the team's played very well without Fox this year. There's a chance the team comes back better because of that aspect that LaVine brings to the team that Monk also brings. So I'm very excited for Kings fans considering they get LaVine here.
I'm just curious what the long-term plan is in Sacramento. Like, that's really kind of my confusion a little bit. Like, I think they did a good job in this trade. I think they got the situation they're in where it's, hey, he wants to go to San Antonio. We have to make sure we get as much as we can. I think they did they got the most they possibly could get for De'Aaron Fox. I'm not killing them for this trade. I just want to know what's next because it's a lot of like, when you look at all the pieces, it's like a lot of ingredients. I have no idea what the hell I'm going to make out of this. Right. Like there's a lot of stuff there and Monk's been awesome. And, you know, if he didn't get hurt last year, he's a sixth man. And we're talking about him at a, you know, different tier, I think, as well. I think, you know, Sabonis has always been really good. You have DeRozan, who's been great. I mean, really kind of showed it last night in their game. And obviously LaVine, and it's just pairing LaVine with DeRozan again. All right, here we go. And Sabonis in the Vooch role. I mean, it's like we saw what the Bulls were. When they had, you know, when they had those guys, and now it's like, are we just signing up to be the Bulls, like in the West, in a tougher conference? Like, I'm a little bit worried about that aspect for the Kings. And now we have all these picks. Like, what's our next move?
I have not heard anything about them trying to trade DeRozan, but I'd be thinking about it. I would be, for exactly the reasons you're talking about. Like, we know what LaVine DeRozan can do together. Let's see if we get something better for DeRozan that fits with LaVine and Monk and Sabonis, because this team, they're 24th in three-point percentage this season. They're not shooting as many threes as they had in past years at 20th in attempts per game. The Kings need shooting. LaVine brings that. If they could flip DeRozan to something that could also be additive there, to me, that would make a lot more sense with this roster taking a certain type of complexion that you would expect. DeRozan just doesn't feel like he will be part of that moving forward.
The DeRozan move always felt funny to me. Like, in the offseason when it happened, I was just like, okay. Like, it wasn't one like, oh, you know, it's just the different phases of Mo, of like my reactions and things, where it's like, oh, what the hell? It was more just like, all right. Like, okay, I didn't see it being a situation where, like, that didn't really move the needle, where I felt like I had to go running to a microphone, you know, and give my opinions. It just felt okay. So, like, I don't know really what you do. And I love DeRozan. Listen, he's an SC guy. Fight on. Like, I'm always going to be on Team DeRozan. But, like, I just didn't feel like it made a lot of sense for them. And now I'm just curious to see how this will play out for the Kings, not just this season, but the next couple seasons.
Just a quick note, the one name we didn't mention that the Kings got back, I think there's a chance. The best non-LaVine asset the Kings got in this trade is CD Sissoko, who has barely played for the Spurs. He's been with the Austin Spurs, their G League team. But Sissoko, I have loved him for a long time, like I do most French players. Versatile defender. He's got size and length. He can pass the ball. The shot has not developed in the ways that you would hope for. But I'm a believer in Sissoko. And I just want to note him for Kings fans.
I want you next time to have a little like beret, little handkerchief tie. Whenever you're going to talk about the French players and your love of the French players, I want you to have a whole little outfit set to go.
There's a French flag drops from the ceiling behind me.
In the background, it plays the anthem, the whole deal.
All right, Mo, let's talk about some stuff that hasn't happened yet. Kevin Durant, a lot of noise around KD this week. I got some intel over the weekend. I had responded to an Anthony Slater post on X, and I said that, you know, Jimmy Butler's not saving the Warriors. There's no one available that can save the Warriors. And then the next morning I heard, well, the Warriors are really calling the Suns a lot about Kevin Durant. I quoted my post with a photo of KD holding his Warriors jersey at his introductory press conference in 2016. And I said, well, there is one player that could save the Warriors. Now, that's been reported on since. I was just teasing it. It has been widely reported on that the Warriors want to go get KD. I'm not so sure that this is actually going to be something that happens here, because if the Suns are indeed open to trading Kevin Durant, are we sure the Warriors are the team that could make the best offer here? Why would Orlando not go out there and offer some picks? Why, like, what is stopping some of these other teams? The Sixers trying to go out and get Kevin Durant. They have four future first-round picks they could trade. I just think there's a hell of a lot of other teams that could go make a better offer for Kevin Durant than the Warriors could.
There's a lot to unpack there. I don't think the Warriors can make the best package, you know, an offer for Kevin Durant. I think Kevin Durant's going to have a say of where he goes. You know, he's up for extension this offseason. So there's always that kind of hammer that team, you know, that guys can kind of use, where it's like, I'm not re-signing there. And, you know, that's kind of what worried the Mavs about the Luka deal, although that's asinine with the Supermax. There was no way he's turning that down, but that's a whole different story. the fact of the matter is, like, there's going to be a little bit of a say there. So you're right in whether KD wants to go there or not. So I don't know if when the Suns say, okay, we're going to look at offers for Kevin Durant, I don't know if they're going to be able to get the max, you know, for him. And it's hard. Look, he's an older player. He's got to go to a team. Like, when you're trading, well, like, you're a young team like Orlando, and you're going to trade a lot to get a guy like Kevin Durant, you also know this is just about 2 years. right? Like it's and again, it's the pressure then becomes you have to win a championship in those 2 years. As long as you have to make this work. This has to be a championship level team, you know? And there's a lot of things when you look at it with KD, injuries come up, you're a little bit concerned. You know, it's the past few years have been very injury riddled for him and things like that. Doesn't mean when he's on the court, he's still damn good. He's, you know, I'm just talking just about last night's game against Portland. I mean, they
still
lose the
top,
game.
Top 15 guy. He's still top 15.
Yeah, he gets his shot off whenever he wants. Yeah, he gets going, finds his groove and his rhythm.
Just not the same defensively. He's not that guy who played the five for the Warriors in the finals and won 2 finals MVPs. He's not that level defender anymore.
Right, and I think that's going to be the thing that's really interesting there. I mean, yeah, if you're the Suns and you can't convince Bradley Beal to waive the no trade clause, and they've done everything they possibly could to make him uncomfortable.
I don't think he will. I don't think he's
going. I don't think he will either. I don't think he's going anywhere.
I don't think so.
So now their only other option is either Durant or Booker. You know, and if I'm a team, I'd pretend I'm calling about Durant, but I'm really going to just kick the tires and see where they're at on Booker. I don't think they'd move him, but that's really like, you know, when they throw out like we want all this, I said no. If you're doing that, I want Booker. You know, and I think that's more where you're trying to figure things out with what Phoenix is going to do. But KD moves the needle for a team. The right team. Your San Antonio example, like that's okay. That's one where everybody's going to sit up and go like, okay, well, San Antonio's going all in. Let's see what we got.
Why not Memphis? Somebody like that, like all the Jimmy Butler talk for them. Why not just pivot to Kevin Durant?
Any team that was interested in Jimmy Butler should be checking to see if they can get Kevin Durant instead. You know, all of them.
There's a lot of teams.
Yes. Everybody's going to be checking in and seeing like, hey, what, you know, it's going to be, it's a conversation. It's definitely the meetings that you have in the front office right now where you get like, this is the way it works, Kevin, like some assistant GM or director of player personnel gets a call of like, hey, would you be interested in Kevin Durant? And he walks into the general manager's office going like, hey man, you're not going to believe this. You know, they want to know what we would offer for KD. You know, and next thing you know, it's all right. We're all in the conference room. Close the doors. Everybody locked in and bunkered. What do we think it's worth? What's the deal? It's a conversation. It's at least a 2-hour meeting of trying to figure out what you would do and how it would work and the impact of everything. So, you know, KD's a guy that will move the needle. Any team that's close to a championship, Houston, Memphis, like you said, I mean, hell, like Indiana should look, you know, and see if they can find a way.
How about the Knicks? I don't think they have enough draft capital, but what if it's like OG Anunoby? What if you trade, let's just say total theoretical. What if you offered OG Anunoby and Mikal Bridges?
I mean, like, I think Phoenix does it more than the Knicks.
I agree. I agree because they have enough offense already. Yes.
Yeah. I think that, like, my thing with the Knicks, man, it's like everybody keeps trying to throw somebody at the Knicks. I'm like, no, they just need to get to the playoffs healthy and ready to roll. Maybe it's move Mitchell Robinson for a different backup big or whatnot or something
that's what
like
they
that.
Should
do. You know, but like that's about it. Like that and that team, keep that core together, even if they don't get to the conference finals this year or the finals. Keep that core together because that's a core that can grow together and can be damn good over time. Like I wouldn't, there are teams I'm just like, don't go big for no reason. I don't feel like you have to. Just because there's a new shiny toy out on the market doesn't mean you need to go run and get it.
When it comes to, you know, some of these kind of, you know, with KD, we're talking about like, well, everybody's focused on Golden State. Who are these other teams that could go after him? When it comes to names in the trade market, I feel like we're hearing so much about Cam Johnson, who you mentioned, KD, Jimmy Butler. There's all these names. Like De'Ron Sharp is mentioned all the time from Brooklyn. We talked about him earlier. The one name you never hear is Larry Nance Jr. from the Atlanta Hawks. Larry Nance Jr., to me, if I'm a team like the Nuggets, if I'm a team like the Clippers, and I'm seeing the Spurs improve their roster, the Mavs getting Anthony Davis, they take a different shape. I'm wanting a better backup big behind my starter. I want a better backup behind Jokic in Denver. I want a better backup behind Zubats and with the Clippers. To me, Larry Nance is that type of guy who can play big. He can play small. He brings versatility to your team. I'm surprised there's not more noise around Larry Nance for a team like Denver, a team like the Clippers. I'd be going for him.
You know, the thing about it with Larry Nance is the idea of Larry Nance is always so much better than the actual reality of Larry Nance.
Like, he's always hurt. The injuries,
it's always, yeah, it's always like we feel like he's going to be this guy. And it's just, it never pans out. It drives me nuts sometimes with him. And I think that's the situation there where it's teams are sort of just wary of the idea of like, hey, we're going to get Nance. He's going to be a piece for us. He's going to be huge for us. Backup position for us. He's going to solve those situations. And then it just never works out for, you know, injury reason, just doesn't fit with the team or whatnot. It just doesn't work out. And I feel like that's one of those things you're kind of worried about. But yeah, I mean, it's like, that's why he's been on five teams already.
Here's the thing with Larry Nance. This year, there's one big difference between him and past years. He's shooting the hell out of the ball. 45% on 3 3-point attempts per game. Last year, he shot well just on a way smaller volume with the Pelicans. There was like a shift in his style offensively. This year, the shots are falling at a high volume. To me, when you talk about fit with him, that was always the thing where it's like, he's a little undersized defensively, doesn't offer the spacing we need offensively. He's more like, he's like a modern tweener. But I'm a believer in what the shot looks like this year and last year. And so that does change the fit aspect with what he can be for your team.
Who do you like better, Obi Toppin or Larry Nance?
Larry Nance.
Because that's really the question, right? Like, because I think Obi Toppin is kind of that Larry Nance. It's Larry Nance Jr. and I was about to call him Larry Nance Jr. But the, you know, Obi Toppin's kind of like the poor man's Larry Nance. And I think that's kind of the situation you're looking at. And you just got to see. I hear you. I just need to see it, man. Like, I just can't in the sense of like a winning championship level team. Because, again, the idea of it is always great. Doesn't seem to always pan out, at least in my view.
We also got a trade on Tuesday, Mo. The Sixers and the Mavericks made a deal. The Sixers are sending Caleb Martin to the Mavericks for Quentin Grimes and their own 2025 second round pick, which right now, top 10 pick in the second round, considering how bad they've been. Interesting deal for Dallas. They get AD, they get Max Christie. My understanding is that Quentin Grimes, his agent, wanted him to be moved because Max Christie will be taking a ton of minutes. Quentin Grimes takes a back seat. He's got an upcoming deal. Philly could theoretically provide more minutes, more opportunity. But for Dallas, Caleb Martin, just a more proven player. This feels like a deal that I understand them making to further bolster that team with the way Nico Harrison wants to build it. Say what you want about, you know, how twisted the viewpoint might be. This does fit what Nico Harrison's vision is about having some defense and versatility on that roster.
Yeah, this is a good trade for Dallas after, you know, the trade that they made. I think this is one of those that's kind of smart. Again, Quentin Grimes fine, but I think, right, Caleb Martin being a proven player is key there. We saw what he's done in Miami defensively, can knock down the three ball. I mean, you're in Boston. You know, Boston fans all know the Martin killing three balls. And I think there's all of those, the fit within the Mavs is a nice one. And I think that's going to be perfect. He's going to slide right in. They have a nice little defensive roster that they're putting together. And I think it's pretty interesting to see what they do in Dallas, you know, this season. I think they're trying to say, and I'll give Harrison credit on this. You know, when you traded for AD, it was, we have to win a championship in the next 3 years. And, hey, we're going to build a defensive roster. We're going to build a defensive team to do that. That's what he's doing. And he's true to his word, at least, right? It's being smart in that sense. It's a smart move for them. Doesn't seem like they were going to have a chance to really, you know, Grimes was going to go in restricted free agency. Don't think they were really going to try to sign him, you know, so let's get something for him. I think it's a smart move on their end.
And for Philly, I wonder if this could be some type of indication of them being willing to sell on this season. There's been, the Yabusele noise as well. Teams calling about him with how stellar he's been back in the NBA this year. I do wonder if maybe they have more of a willingness to just, you know, kick the can till next year and hope things get better. Hope for lottery luck this year with their first.
Yeah, I think that's going to be the case for Philly. I think that's the most, you know, you kind of see it. That's what this trade signals on their end. of like, hey, our fringe guys might be available. I mean, somebody might call about Kelly Oubre. Somebody's going to be checking. Yeah, Buselli's a guy I would keep an eye on as another big that might end up getting moved, you know, before the deadline. Like, that's in a similar type trade. Might not be a first round pick they get, but maybe a second or 2 seconds. Like, there's going to be something there to keep an eye on for Philly. But that's definitely the signal we just got from the Sixers.
The only thing I'll say, you know, playing devil's advocate here, Quentin Grimes is not bad.
Oh,
he's not a bad player. He's 40% from three on the year. We've seen him, like, what was it, 2 years ago with, or 2 years ago with Detroit, or the end of his tenure with the Knicks, where he was like just 25 points per game to close a season. Yeah, it was his last year with the Knicks, yeah, I
the
believe.
Knicks. It was the Knicks. It was the Knicks.
Yeah. Yes, yes. And it's like we've seen him have these stretches.
He can play. This isn't a shot about him being bad. Like
24 years old. He's young.
This is a good move from the Sixers. Also, restricted free agent. Like I said, they're going to be able to retain him, you know, and keep an eye on the market and stuff. So this is their way of taking a flyer on him. See what we have. See how he fits with the team. A team that's going to need defense on the perimeter. I think Grimes provides that toughness a little bit more. I think this helps them in that regard. Like, I think this is an important move for them. It's just along the lines of, it's not a move that's going to change their fortunes this season.
Well, as we wrap up this recording, Mo, we're about 48 hours from the deadline. 48 hours from the deadline. I talked with Pete from Laker Film Room earlier in the show about his take on the Lakers getting Luka. I'll be very interested to see if the Lakers make another move. We did see the Pelinka press conference this morning as we record as well. He, you know, had all his fantastical things. He said the way Pelinka says things. I'm excited to see what happens, man. I think we're going to have some more moves. Dallas already made another move. I bet the Lakers will make another move. It's just a matter of what. I'm excited, Mel. I'm fired up.
There you go, Kevin.
The best trade deadline ever, Mo.
48 hours.
The best deadline ever.
Well, it's going to be the best trade deadline ever when a trade gets announced and everybody assumes the guy was hacked and it wasn't real. Like that, you can never top that in a trade deadline. Like, you will never. That's the pinnacle. That's the Mount Everest peak right there. Of he announces the trade and everybody's like, nah, that's not real. It's everybody's reaction was the same in that regard until we got confirmation. I'm with you. The Lakers are going to make a move. They desperately need a big man. I think they need to be aggressive in terms of what they do, in terms of adding another big man to it. But one thing, Kevin, and I just want to say this, because this is going to bother me a little bit, because I've been the most critical of Robert Pelinka for quite a while, and everybody's going to give him a ton of credit for him. I'm not giving him a lot of credit for this Luka deal. This was gifted to him. I don't care what anybody says. This was gifted to him. And Nico Harrison was only making one phone call. It was only to his buddy Rob. This was a gift for him. Now I will give him credit when he builds the roster around Luka and we see that it makes sense. Because the past few years, he's not done a great job with it. This is that he can pretend like, hey, this is why we didn't make all the moves or whatever. He had no clue this was coming. And I'm 100% convinced when he got the conversation going with Harrison, and he was like, well, what about Luka? He was probably thinking the guy was drunk or high. Like, there's no way this is that. So, like, I know we're going to give him a lot of credit with everything. I'm not ready to give him this. He was gifted this by the Mavs. This is an unbelievable situation for the Lakers. But it's the way it always works for the Lakers. The Pau Gasol trade. One was 17 years to the day that trade happened. It's insane.
It's Lakers exceptionalism. That's what it is.
I got it. That's what I gotta stop crapping on. Lakers exceptionalism is something I've crapped on it a ton over the years. I gotta stop. Because it just works. It's just, if you're a Laker fan, yeah, just constantly believe you're gonna get everybody because somebody's gonna call and give you a top three player who's 25 years old for one draft pick and Anthony Davis, who I'm not trying to crap on, but it ain't comparable, man. Like, that's just insane. One draft pick, Kevin. That's all it took. Not even the good draft pick. You get the 2031 draft pick, not the 2029. Killing me. He might have done some great Svengali talking to Harrison to keep him from making other phone calls. He might have done a great job in whittling the deal down and pretend like great acting, much like Rob Lowe, his doppelganger.
You seem salty, Mo.
I just honestly, this is a great deal. But it's a deal like everybody. It's not like he's a genius.
Sure.
We're going to give him this credit and all of this where Rob Pelinka has done all these amazing. This was gift wrapped for him. This was a gift from the Mavs. Happy Valentine's Day, Rob Pelinka and the Los Angeles Lakers organization. Here's your franchise star for the next 10 years. Like, I don't want to walk around and act like Pelinka's this unbelievable genius. He's not done a lot with this roster over the years. And I feel like, you know, now I'm excited because I want to see what he builds around Luka, because he's got to put a roster together that can win a championship.
I mean, hey, sometimes some great deals fall into your lap. Earlier this year in my fantasy basketball league, I traded Tyus Jones and Derek Lively for Cade Cunningham.
Sometimes you just win deals. Out. You need to out the person who gave you that offer.
Nope, I'm not going to do that. I gave the offer. I'm the one who proposed the deal. But sometimes you just win them. Sometimes you win a deal.
I didn't expect to win it the way I did.
I'm in third place right now.
Third place. Go give up Yabusele for Giannis. You'll be fine. That'll work for you. That's what your fantasy league seems to be doing. What? Who would take that?
The ninth place team.
Was cash exchanged at least? Like something? Like, did you buy him a lobster roll? Or
they needed a point guard, and they needed a big. They had no centers, and I was the lifeboat that brought out Derek Lively.
You know, the funny thing is,
who could have seen Cade turning into an All-NBA guy? It happened, you know.
I'm going to be thinking about that maybe even more than the Luka Doncic trade today. Like, that's like, wow. Okay.
Mo, thank you for joining me today, man.
Thank you for having me, Kevin.
Thanks again to Pete and Mo for joining me on today's episode of The Kevin O'Connor Show. Please give us a 5-star rating on Spotify and Apple, a thumbs up on YouTube, and subscribe wherever you are listening or watching this podcast. Thanks to Emmy and Mike for producing it. And thanks to you for giving us a listen. Hope you have a great rest of your week. We'll be back again on Thursday with a trade deadline reaction show. No matter what happens, Tom Haverstraw, can't wait. Have a good one.